Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Mac Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. It's another gray, rainy, shitty day. I know it's the most stereotypical thing to complain about the weather, but the weather is daring us not to.
I like it.
Why? Because it keeps everyone in, and it's good from a practical point of view for coronavirus. Beyond that, I don't know what else you can like.
Do you remember studying for finals?
Yeah.
Do you remember what time of year that was?
Yeah, it'd be right now. It'd be right around now.
Yeah. And when it was really nice out on the weekend and you had a major exam on Monday, did you think, this is awesome. It is so gorgeous out and I've got to spend 12 hours taped to my desk.
Yeah, then it sucked.
Right.
I agree.
Right now we're in a permanent state of taking finals.
Yeah. It's a good way of looking at it. I will say this. The one time that pissed me off. Oh, yeah, go.
No, I was just going to say, I don't like it. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think this.
Yeah.
Oh, so okay. When I say I like it, that's technically a lie.
Okay. You're just doing your best.
Yes. Okay. Fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Or as the Bible says, act as if ye have faith and ye shall be given faith.
Oh, a little biblical reference 2 minutes in. I was going to say the one only sunny day. I'm sitting doing my radio show and I'm sitting where I am now. And I look outside and there's Amy and Christy and they're playing like Yahtzee having a Caesar. And I'm sitting in here slaving over a hot mic. I'm like, hey, I can see you right there enjoying the weather.
Okay, so I can relate to this because, as you know, over the last 9 months or so, I have changed my diet.
Yeah.
And people always say to me, because I cut out sweets, I cut out chips, I cut out dairy, like a lot of things. And basically all snack foods are processed foods, like the good stuff.
Yeah.
So people would say to me, it must be so hard on Sandra. It's like, yeah, she gave up nothing, zero. More importantly, we would be sitting on the couch and she would be sitting next to me, leaning on me, eating chips so that the path of flight of her hand with the chip from the bowl would go past my face. Not on purpose. She didn't care. It never occurred to her what was going on.
Yeah, like she didn't grab two Pringles like she was a burlesque dancer going, oh, do, boop, do, 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 do. Like she wasn't doing that to you.
By the way, you may have articulated my unknown perfect fantasy, which is Pringles pasties.
Oh, yeah, I like to pop one of those. High five!
But you can't have just one.
No, at 44, I can have just one.
Oh, man, Friday, open kimono pod. Yeah, totally.
It needs to be said, your willpower is incredible. When I had to lose weight for hernia, I just said, there's not going to be any food around. You know, I'm not putting any wine out. And by having it all away, I could avoid it. And also for medical purposes, that was sort of a motivation. Yes, there's medical, but it's not some immediate thing. And it's all around you. If food is all around me, I'm going to eat it. I'm good if I don't see it. But if I see it, it's going to get nibbled on.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, the good thing is that I'm a fairly damaged human being. So once I get obsessive about something, I tend to dive in.
Yep.
You know this, Matt. I've been working with some people on projects that I'll disclose sooner rather than later.
Whatever. Doing this for ages.
But I've started noticing as I get further down the road that I'm starting to send these people texts at 5 a.m. Mm. And do you remember those good old days?
Oh, yeah.
Of receiving. Now, we were doing mornings, so, you know, you'd be up like half an hour later. But I think for our young producers, they were confused.
Yes.
When we used to do radio. Aaron Korolnik, whom you work a lot with now.
Yep.
That was his only bit of advice to the producer who followed him. He said, be prepared for 6 a.m. Saturday emails.
Yep. Just the random, those random messages at all times.
By the way, here's 11 things I think we should do starting now.
Yeah. Oh, those poor producers.
They never knew what was coming. It was the perfect wave. They thought they were just out there catching tuna.
Nope. They were like with the giant wave and they're standing next to George Clooney.
We've got a lot to get to. The AMC questions you sent me for this Friday installment are outstanding. Nicely done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you have anything you want to get to sportsy before we dive into movies and listener questions and stuff?
So let me just throw this out at you. There's four things going on this weekend. There's a Skins game with like Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, a couple other famous golfers, and it's all going for charity. You've got a NASCAR event in South Carolina. You got a UFC fight night, and you've got the final two episodes of The Last Dance, the Jordan documentary. Of the four, what's got you most interested?
I will absolutely watch The Last Dance, but I may not do it this weekend. Mm-hmm. So we'll disqualify that because I think your question is sort of like, what do you want to do this weekend?
Yeah.
I would say the UFC fight because I'm not really a golf guy or a racing guy. And I'm not so desperate for sports that I'm going to start watching a sport I don't like just because it's on.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just to see some competition. I'm not Jordan, where I don't have a gambling problem. I have a competition problem. Okay.
Yeah.
Like we're maybe splitting hairs here, but anyway. No, I'm curious to see the UFC, and I haven't really tuned into some of these fights. You know, I've been thinking a lot about this, Maddie. You and I love sports.
Yeah.
You're still involved in it professionally. You and I have done it professionally for most of our careers.
Yes.
And most of our lives, we've been sports fans. But I was thinking about baseball coming back. You know, it seems more and more. I think Rob Manfred was on today on CNN suggesting, you know, there's a fighting chance there's going to be baseball this summer in some way. I'm not so desperate for it to return that I'm willing to take a bad version of it, you know? And I was thinking about this for all the sports, right? Like, you know, there's no crowd in the arena. Okay, I can, whatever, take or leave that, I bet, right? But if it really comes down to it and I'm not enjoying watching them, it's like this Jays when they had the bad season last year. Like, yeah. I didn't watch them either. Like, I'm just not so desperate for sports that I'll watch bad sports. Will you? I guess you have to because you're professional.
Yeah, I kind of have to, but that makes sense. You know, I think I'll be watching it, but less with joy and more with I have to. Sort of like if I was in the woods and starving and someone gave me squirrel meat, I need to eat it to survive, but I'd rather have the venison at a medium rare with a little bit of, you know, au jus. So I'll eat it because I got to, because for work and stuff, but I won't enjoy it as much if the product is so diminished because of whatever compromises need to happen.
Have you ever seen the show on Discovery Channel called Naked and Afraid?
I know it. I've never seen it.
Okay. So I love it. And I'm always amazed how, like, you know, they're out in the wilderness for 21 days and they have to survive with basically nothing to work with.
Yeah.
And the first thing that always happens is, you know, they're able to forage, but they have no protein because you got to hunt for protein. Mm-hmm. And then somebody will catch like a crayfish and open up the claw and have like a thimble sized piece of meat.
Yeah.
And afterwards they'll be like, oh, I needed that so bad. It totally made me feel better. I kind of feel like there's a version of the sports fan out there that's going to treat any sports like that crab meat.
Oh yeah.
Needed something.
It's like the NFL schedule release event. I mean, the draft was great. That was actual piece of meat. But the NFL schedule, that was the crayfish.
You know, it's one of the takeaways I've gotten from the last 2 months with sports. This is not sustainable, but it's been true so far. That hypothetical sports are at least as interesting as real ones. Yeah, here's what I mean by that. Like the conversations you have around hypothetical things in sports are at least as interesting as actually watching the game.
Oh, I would argue you could take NBA playoffs a couple of the years, especially when Durant was with Golden State, and the transactions and what's going to happen in the offseason was more interesting than the actual basketball where, you know, when Golden State would be up 3-0 in a series against Cleveland. Yeah, the transaction is often more interesting than the event on the court.
And this is becoming more and more true, I think, as they figure out how to turn what was always a soap opera on the inside into a soap opera on the outside. And that is any league is kind of like a soap opera.
Yep.
I think eventually nothing replaces the joy of watching a big game when you're really emotionally invested in the result. But they kind of forced this on us by making 95% of the games you watch outside of the playoffs kind of meaningless.
Once they start to devalue the regular season and everyone just openly acknowledges it, then yes, then the transfer of your emotional investment, some of it's going to leave the court, the field, the ice, the whatever, and it's going to the transaction, the who said what, the can you believe they signed for that kind of news.
You know, I love basketball so deeply, but if I'd be lying if I said I wasn't at least as emotionally invested in the conversation about is Kyle Lowry underrated?
Yeah.
As I do about his performance on a random Tuesday night in Charlotte.
Yep.
I'm probably more interested in defending him than I am watching him defend.
The good thing is we're now, well, no, I was going to say we're now at the point where we know he's, you know, he gets the proper respect. But I'm sure in the States he doesn't. Hey, I want to go back to Naked and Afraid for a second. I got a question for you.
Me too.
Who do you feel worse for? The naked person trying to kill a crayfish, the cameraman that has to be there the whole time, or the editor that has got to pixelate all the ass and ass crack from the shot?
It's a great question. So let's take this in order. The person doing it asked for it. They signed up for it. I feel no sympathy. Mm-hmm. Feel a certain amount of amusement, but not sympathy. The camera person, I'm going to say the camera person, except no. Now I'm going to go with the editor. It's a great question. See, the camera person I doubt is also camping. Yeah. I feel like at the end of a long day, they go to a hotel room.
Yeah.
So I think it's a tough gig, but having to pixelate all those testicles over and over again.
And that takes a lot of time.
It's so long.
Tedious. And you just, at least the camera guy, you might be filming it, but you can sort of passively move your line of vision away from the genitalia. But with the editor, you've got to be razor focused on the balls. And you got to make sure no ball is shown.
What Naked and Afraid really shows is that the butt has been finally emancipated from all moral considerations, mm-hmm. because they don't pixelate butts, just the front parts.
Yeah.
And if you go to Instagram, butts are allowed, but not the front parts.
Who decides?
Which makes me think I don't know. It seems fairly arbitrary to me, but you know, we could get into a 20-year conversation about sexual prurience and the Western imagination.
Yeah.
But it makes me laugh because it reminds me of a kinder, gentler time, because when we were growing up, if you saw a butt on TV, that was water cooler talk the next day at school.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Do you remember the first time you saw nudity and you had to tell people about it? I actually do. I actually remember mine.
Okay, well, you go first.
Clash of the Titans.
Yes. Yes, there was. You got some booby in Clash of the Titans.
And I was a kid. I was really into mythology and adventures, and I did not see that coming. Yeah. And like, it completely shattered my young mind. I was probably about 11.
I'm going to go somewhere different. I could have done the Fast Times at Richmond High, but I'm going to go somewhere different. This is about as nerdy and honest as this podcast gets. The new drawings in Monster Manual in Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Because of the mythology, there was some characters where good old Gary Gygax threw in some boobs.
Okay, so let's talk. If you remember, the Lamia was topless from the waist up.
Yes, I do remember that.
And we both remember that, which means it left an impression.
Yes, it did.
Right? And you don't exactly like earmark those pages, but while you were reading the Monster Manual,
you lingered.
Didn't you find you kind of like knew those stats maybe a little better?
I knew the armor class and the treasure types that I would get from that more than maybe the Hobgoblin.
You know what? And you've made this point many times, and I agree with you, and I'm curious to see how this plays out in culture at large, but kids today are thrown into the deep end of sexuality because they have access to everything. Whereas we were the frogs in the pot growing up, and the heat was just turned up so slowly.
Oh yeah, we got
like I don't even know what a point of entry is anymore for these kids. Like, they have access to everything.
By the way, Bob, I think point of entry is their access to it now. They just type that in the YouTube, and that's what they get.
That was I don't know how the rest of the podcast is going to go, but if there's a better line than that, Matt, I'll be shocked.
I'm fine ending this right now. But
yeah, that was drop the mic.
But you're right. It was a slow simmer in nudity, you know, versus, you know, like, I feel bad. I feel bad for like a 9-year-old just coming across, God, everything's an entendre, but just discovering this. And it's not going to be a just one booby. It's going to be far more. And I think that's bad for a kid at that age. You shouldn't be exposed to that. You're supposed to have it slowly weaned into your life.
The thing that I think will be damaged is the capacity for imagination.
Yeah.
I think if we just think of the brain as something that develops over time, not just through experience, but even just neurologically as things get wired, one of the great things about being a kid is how much imagination you have, because you don't have the answers to stuff that you're curious about. When you have the answers, your brain doesn't have to do the work. Even if it's wrong, it doesn't matter, because you learn how to hypothesize, you learn how to fantasize, you learn. I'm not saying this is necessarily bad. I don't know. But I feel like we're going to raise a generation of kids that don't have enough imagination. They'll be good at getting stuff.
They will be.
But they won't be good at thinking of stuff.
I have taken no parenting courses. I've taken no psychology courses. I do not have children. I do believe that someone who may still believe in Santa should not suddenly come across 20 minutes of hardcore pornography. I don't think the brain is ready. If you believe in Santa, I don't think you should see a threesome.
You know, so when they do testing on the internet, you know, are you a robot?
Yeah.
Instead of check yes or no or whatever, they should have, do you believe in Santa? Mm-hmm. And if you check yes, you are immediately shuttled off that page.
Out of there. There is no easier point of entry than the internet when it says, are you of age? Yep. All right, come on in. And I'm not talking like some dirty porn stuff. I'm talking like in wine and alcohol and stuff like that. It's like, all right, come on in and check out the Merlot we have to offer.
There are no locks on the doors.
Yep. So you want to do some AMC stuff?
Sure. Whatever you like. You know, mi casa, su casa. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever's good for you.
All right. So this one was one of my favorites. Yesterday, Mission Impossible was on. And I'm like, we're not doing Tom Cruise movies. We're not even just doing Tom Cruise action movies. Let's mix it up a bit. In the opening scenes of Mission Impossible, the one crew is all killed, including Emilio Estevez. That was shocking. It's like, hey, Emilio Estevez is in this movie. Cool. I wonder what adventures he'll get in with Tom Cruise. Instead, he gets impaled while he's on the top of an elevator, and he's gone. So the question was, movies that had the most shocking famous actor, it's got to be famous actor movie deaths. And I mean, this could be early in the movie, or you're shocked that they killed him at all, or wow, I can't believe Meryl Streep died. So it was, that was the question we did yesterday. I got my list. I don't know if you have ones you want to throw out. I can,
you know, I don't have a list. I just have a couple movies I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
So why don't you do your list? And then as we like to say, on the pod, you give your list and then I'll grade it and offer corrections.
it's such a good line. All right. I'm going to first give you my honorable mentions. I'll start throwing them out there. And like a game show, you just yell stop when you want to comment. Brad Pitt, Burn After Reading.
Mm-hmm.
Macaulay Culkin, My Girl. Bruce Willis, Glass. Leonardo DiCaprio, The Departed. John Travolta, Pulp Fiction. Sean Connery, The Untouchables. Those are my honorable mentions.
Now, does Leo in The Departed count, because it happens at the end?
I think because he survived that long, it's like, wait, he made it all the way here. And now, and the death was, it wasn't like some sort of heroic 30-minute John Woo fight chase scene. It was just, you know, I think it was like pop on the rooftop and bang, gets it.
That was Martin Sheen, actually.
Martin Sheen gets thrown off the roof, but I think...
Yeah, sorry, I thought you meant that. No, he gets popped.
Yeah.
When the doors open and there's that other guy who's a turncoat. Okay, so that's your honorable mentions.
Those are my honorable mentions. Yeah. So here's my top five. Gwyneth Paltrow in Seven. Hilary Swank in Million Dollar Baby. Now a classic. Samuel Jackson, Deep Blue Sea. R.I.P. Russell Franklin. Drew Barrymore in Scream. And number one, you're not going to agree with it, but I don't care, because I got choked up and I saw some of my childhood die, Harrison Ford in Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Okay, so are these shocking movie deaths or shocking movie early deaths?
No, no, it could be either. Like, these are just like
okay,
shocking.
Okay, I didn't understand.
These are just shocking famous actor. It has to be a famous actor who dies. And it can be early, because sometimes that's a shock, like Drew Barrymore, Emilio Estevez.
Okay, okay. Yeah. You know what? In fairness, okay, I misunderstood the question as you threw it out. I took the Emilio thing too literally.
Yeah.
I think you've missed the most important shocking movie death of them all. Mm. And it's Janet Leigh in Psycho.
Yeah, yeah.
It utterly and absolutely changed movies forever.
Yep.
No leading lady was killed in the first reel before that movie.
Yeah.
Psycho, 1960 or 61, there's the shower scene, and she was the hero. And we'd spent all this time with her. We spent about 20, 25 minutes with her. We're so invested in her personal story. She steals the money from work. She realizes she wants to take it back because she doesn't want to live this life of crime and guilt and shame. And as she did, before she gets a chance to do it, Norman takes her out. And the movie utterly and totally changes at that point.
It does.
Not only is the scene itself cut as magnificently as anything has ever been cut, pardon the pun, in movie history, but the level of disbelief that audience would have had at that point that something like this could even happen. Like, can you imagine how mind-blowing that must have been?
Oh.
It never happened.
Absolutely. And she had redemption. Usually in a movie like this, if they're bad, however morally you want to describe badness, she was turning her life around. So now you could root for her. And you're right. That's a great one.
You know, it's funny because I remember watching Predator versus Alien. And in the opening scene, a father and son are hunting and there is a predator. Or maybe it's an alien. I can't even remember now. But anyway, the important thing is that the kid gets taken out too.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, oh, so it's going to be one of those movies.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be more kitschy. And the kids were never allowed to, like, that was always the third rail for years. So that, while in itself wasn't a celebrity shocking death, I think it shows how post-Psycho, killing off someone that you think is going to live is your way of signaling the rules aren't going to apply the way you expect them to here.
So basically 50 plus years before Game of Thrones, you had Psycho.
You know what? That is a great point too. Like, even though it's not a film, but when...
Sean Bean.
No, it's not that one. It's in the opening. And even though he wasn't killed, but you think he's going to die.
Oh, the kid. Yeah. When Bran,
you know, gets thrown out of the window and Jamie says to Cersei, the things I do for love.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That first episode is, you'd already had plenty of head trauma and incest. Now you're having child murder on top of it.
Unbelievable. I jumped off the couch and ran around like a dude on Maury who was told he's not the father. Like, I was in total shock.
Hot take. Would Game of Thrones have been better if Bran had died there?
I don't want to say yes, but we all know. The Drew Barrymore one's really great, and that was obviously a nod to Psycho.
Yeah.
The beautiful blonde starlet who gets killed in the first reel.
The Hilary Swank one, what I always find interesting there is Million Dollar Baby was, at that point, just this. It was a cool, great, well-crafted sports movie with all the tropes. You had Fish Out of Water and Hilary Swank. You had the odd couple, old guy, younger woman. You know, you had him coming out of retirement for one more train to do one more fighter. And it was all that. And then the paralysis. And now it became a different movie. And then he kills her, you know, at the end. So it became from a sports movie to commentary about assisted suicide. That movie, it took a turn if you didn't know what was going to happen.
And you make a really good point, too, about how sports movies, as much as anything, if not more, have a certain program they're supposed to follow.
Yeah.
They're all about, you know, triumphing over adversity. So when someone actually loses, but not in an inspirational way where they learn a greater lesson, mm-hmm. like that movie is so bleak because what lesson did she learn? She died.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, horrible. And,
okay, so lean in, Matt, because I'm going to tell a story here.
All right.
I want to tell you about a story about a 10-year-old boy named Bob Mackiewicz,
okay.
known as Bobby back then. Mm-hmm. Loved movies. Loved movies so much that he actually wrote a 50-page project in the summer called Hooray for Hollywood, A History of Movies. Dreamed one day that he would be a writer, and I'm embarrassed to say now, an actor. So movies meant so much to me, maybe more than anything in the whole world. And I watched a movie in 1979 called The Champ, starring John Voight and Ricky Schroeder. And it was a story of an aging boxer and his boy. And the boxer had a kind of a hard scramble life and maybe hadn't have been the best father, but the, you know, and the boy was sort of being drawn away from the fighter by his mother, who wanted a better life for him. Mm-hmm. And the boy just loved his dad so much. And the fighter got into the ring one more time just to show the boy. And he found, and it was kind of like the story of battling Jack Murdoch and Matt Murdoch. Like, he wanted to fight one more time just to show his boy that he had pride. Champ takes a beating and dies on a table in front of his boy.
Oh.
And Ricky Schroeder, his blonde little hair and his blue eyes filled up with tears. What did he say, Matt? You've been saying it the whole time?
Champ, don't
come
cry,
back.
Champ.
Don't die.
Devastating. And
even now, as I'm talking about it, I want to start crying.
Yep.
And I've had 40 years to deal with it.
Yep.
At the time, I'm not even sure the word inconsolable existed before that moment, mm-hmm. or at the very least, it found a new definition. That to me was the shocking movie death, because it was a sports movie and it was a kid's movie and the dad died in front of the boy.
Yes. That movie, it must have not only confused you, like, wait, this can happen? You almost might have felt betrayed. Like, what did you do? What did you just do to me here?
You know what? Why don't you do Jeff Pollock? I need a minute.
Okay. All right, let me tell you something right now. Let's say, you know, you get into a fight and it's a legal fight. You're going to need someone better than the champ had in his corner, because they should have thrown the towel a lot sooner. You need someone to fight for you. We got a guy who fights for us. His name is Jeff Pollock. He is our lawyer. He will fight for our wills, our litigation, states, trust, corporate, commercial, real estate law, whatever sort of law you need. He'll be there for you. He'll be there in your corner. He'll be a great corner man. It's a small family-run organization. His wife's a part of it. She's like a genius accountant. It's perfect. He's our lawyer. He should be yours. JeffPollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. 416-777-0088. That number again, 416-777-0088. They will put a TKO in whatever your problems are legally.
Yeah, I'm back. And I want to point out that your inclusion of Samuel Jackson in Deep Blue Sea is magnificent.
It had to be there. I mean, that's a classic. You can't do a list. You can't do a list with it. Gwyneth Paltrow was shocking. She was barely in the movie. And she was never even close to any of the danger. And then suddenly, you know, you don't know who's in the box. And then you realize who's in the box. And yes, John Doe does have the upper hand. It's a brilliant and just shocking death.
Yeah, you know, it's weird you say that. It's such an iconic moment, but for no particular reason, even this morning, like, I'm washing my face and whatever, and I'm thinking about Brad Pitt going, "What's in the box?" Yeah. Like, it's just such a great film moment. God, that's brutal.
Yep.
So brutal. You're right. That's an excellent, shocking movie, Dan.
Yep.
Did we get any listener questions?
I forgot to tweet it out. Did you?
Nah, I forgot to tweet it out.
Suck, I suck.
We're just so bad.
Yeah.
You think by now we'd be better at this. We're like on episode 163.
163? Yeah, it's like 163. Yeah, it's in the mid-160s.
Yeah, I got a sports question for you.
Sure, do it.
Who's your number two in the NBA? Like, it feels like now to suggest anyone other than Jordan is just going to get an eye roll.
Yeah, Jordan's number one.
Do you feel like the battle is for number two?
Careful, the LeBron army will come after you.
You know, there's an awful lot of great players, though. Kareem, mm-hmm. Bill Russell.
Here's the list of who could be number three. Or number two, excuse me. It's LeBron.
Yeah.
It's Kareem.
Mm-hmm.
It's Bill Russell. It's Wilt. It's one of those guys. That's the list. You got to pick from that as your number two.
I kind of agree. You know, in all of this conversation, you know what I was thinking the other day? Mm. I would love for there to be a really good look at Kareem's life, because he is a very interesting human being.
Oh yeah, and there's been some great talks on him.
I would love to see someone give the Last Dance treatment to Kareem. So smart.
Yep.
Such a good writer, such an intelligent, thoughtful person. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like basketball's Ken Dryden. Like, there's just something about his intellect that rides above everything. Yeah. You know, he would be amazing in public office, but they would never allow it. First of all, his name is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. I mean, he could
a lot
do
of people
it
didn't like it back then.
No, yeah, you could do it now. They certainly couldn't have done it during his day.
Absolutely.
And then you throw in his cameo in Airplane. The one time we're like, wait a minute, he's actually a human who actually can be funny.
Dude, he did a cameo that was funny in Airplane. He did a fight scene in Game of Death with Bruce Lee that was credible.
Yep.
That's range.
Yeah, the man has range. Everyone's doing the top 10 list and all of that. The only thing I'll say, I have Kobe a little bit lower. ESPN had Kobe Kobe over Shaq. I would have had Shaq and Hakeem Olajuwon over Kobe, which is no insult to Kobe. I think I was looking at the list, and you can mix and match two and four and six and seven, but I don't get that angry. But I do have Hakeem and Shaq over Kobe Bryant.
So I want to take this into a leafy territory, but I'm going to use the bridge of The Last Dance as a way to get there. Because I was thinking about you while I was watching the last episode, because the last one I saw was the battle between the Knicks and the Bulls, where the Knicks beat them to go into the final.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hooray!
Yeah, no, that was good for you, because you were a Knicks fan at the time. The Raptors didn't even exist, so that was your team, right?
Yep.
Now, I was a Bulls fan, so it hurt. And, you know, they, of course, covered the famous Scotty 1.8 refusal to go in. We don't need to go down that road. But it got me to thinking about the famous John Starks 3-for-18 game and how the Knicks got so close to winning a title but just missed it. And it occurred to me that the Leafs team could be that Knicks team, where they assemble this team that is championship worthy. They get really close. They finally crack through after all the obstacles in front of them are cleared away. They make the most of their path, and then in one game, they blow it. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about how that Knicks team was looked back upon. And I thought, would we be as forgiving to a Leafs team that just missed at this point? Like, people remember very fondly the Patrick Ewing almost champion Knicks, right?
Yeah.
Would we remember a Leafs team that just missed really fondly? Or would we see it as, you bastards, you set us up?
I think we would view it fondly because A, you get that means you have several playoff round wins. It means you've given us a month of excitement. I think you know, the history of the Maple Leafs is so utterly pathetic that you go on that sort of run and you are going to satiate more than you're going to disappoint. And don't get me wrong, you're going to disappoint and people are going to be crushed, but at least you had some of that journey. And if you got to the finals, you don't lose to Boston. That's another point.
See, I agree with you, but I'm not ready to go all the way with it. Here's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
We still talk about Carey Fraser in 1993 because they probably, like, you know, they had every opportunity, if Gretzky's not in the lineup, to win and move on to a final, right? Mm-hmm. And they were a really good team. Like, that felt like a great chance snatched away. It's easier when it's taken away, though, than when you blew it. Like, what if they went out and, like, somebody like Austin Matthews or Freddie Anderson or whoever was effing brutal? Mm-hmm. Now, it's different than basketball in the sense that one bad player in hockey doesn't affect the whole outcome.
Yeah.
You know. But you also saw this with, like, Yu Darvish when he got shelled by the Astros. And everyone started talking about, Yu Darvish, he's just, you know. Or maybe a better example would be Clayton Kershaw.
Clayton Kershaw, yep.
Right? When you have high expectations, I don't know if we're going to be as forgiving as we used to be. Like, I thought we still look back on Patrick Ewing's Knicks and say, what a great team, what a great run they had. But would Leafs fans, after all of this time waiting, accept a bone-out job? Because let's not forget, the reason I brought this up is because Starks blew it.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
Blew it.
Yeah, they did. And they had a 3-2 series lead. They lost game 6 and 7.
Exactly.
And Starks was horrible in game 7. If he was just average, the Knicks win the championship that year. I think also part of the reason why people can look fondly on the Knicks is beyond that game 7, who did they usually lose to? They would lose to Jordan. No. Everyone lost to Jordan, so it's not as dishonorable. You know, I think for the Leafs, it all depends on the circumstances. Is they lose in the finals to a much better team, you can live with that a little bit more, you know, versus if they lost to a team where the Leafs were the clear favorite and they got outplayed and made mistakes and you felt like it was a wasted opportunity?
I don't know. There's no way to know this because it hasn't happened yet. I'll be interested to see the way the baggage of these growing pains follows this team. Because there was a lot of baggage around those early Jordan teams. Like, let's not forget, he was 30 when he won. He was in the league for 7 years when he finally won. And they had heartbreak with the Pistons. And before that, they weren't a joke franchise, but they certainly weren't a dangerous one. And people knocked Jordan for being a bad teammate. Selfish player out there. You know, the way we would talk about Carmelo. Different players, but the same kind of they're in it for themselves vibe. So I'm interested to see the way moving forward we look at this Leafs team.
And we're back. There was a little bit of an issue. I'm assuming, Bob, your wife and daughter suddenly got on both of their supercomputers and were downloading every movie.
Drained the pod to nothing.
Yes.
Okay, so I was just busy speculating on the Leafs, which is what one does when locked up at home. You came up with a great AMC question about rebooting franchise and what franchise you would reboot or remake if you could.
Because Fantastic Four was on and they've all been so horrible, and I mean they had Miles Teller and Michael B. Jordan and it was still horrible. So it was an honor of that.
Okay, so what was your list? I'm actually really curious because you and I we're IP kind of guys.
I'm pulling it up right now. I'll tell you one that was on my list that was controversial. And it wasn't because it was a bad movie. They're great movies. And maybe I'm playing with fire. But I kind of wanted Back to the Future just because I want well-done time travel movies back in my life. I love time travel movies. But
yeah, Looper's good.
Yeah, Looper is good. So here's my top five.
Okay.
Number five, Soylent Green.
I want to see
a 2020, you know, a newer version of this movie where basically an evil company is feeding this dystopian world and they're using people. So that was number five. Number four, The Running Man. But Arnold, he's now the villain. He's the Damon Killian role. Bring back Fireball, Captain Freedom, Dynamo, and Buzzsaw. At number three, Waterworld, Quest for Dry Land. I loved Waterworld. Two was Back to the Future. Number one, Star Wars, the prequels, but in this version, no CGI or very little CGI, no Jar Jar Binks, and I don't want any of those fucking movies opening with conversations about galaxies being taxed. How much of that movie is intergalactic tax things? I'm like, what's going on? So that was my top five.
You don't find tariffs interesting?
No, I still don't know how escrow works in the NHL. I don't want that in my Star Wars.
You're right. That movie and that whole like plot driver was like during the lockout when you had to pretend to be interested in escrow and hockey-related revenue. That's a great – I never would have made that association. It's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a really great list, actually. The Waterworld is ingenious. The Running Man is inspired. Great list.
Thank you.
I want to pick up on something here. Let's do two of yours, and then we can get to some of my additions.
Sure.
Tell me more about your thoughts behind Running Man, because I'm actually – the idea of Schwarzenegger as the Killian, God, that's a good idea.
It's because he'd be a great villain now. He's older, just like Richard Donner was, so he can fit that role very well. The great thing about this movie is the casting, because not only do you get who's the new hero – but now you can get four stars to be, you know, the Dynamos and the Fireballs and all of that. And I think so many actors would love to play those roles. Like, I forget who was the big fat guy. I think it might have been Buzz. I don't know. Whoever the fat one was, give that to, like, Jack Black. I mean, there's so many places you can go.
Well, and you could go different tones, too. Like, you could go kitschy, as you suggest, or you could make it more realistic. Like, they tried to do this with Rollerball, where you took, like, a 70s or an early sort of action movie and then update it. And that didn't work so good, because I don't think they found the right tone.
Yeah.
You could either do the darker version of The Running Man, because God knows reality TV is almost there. Or you could just have fun with it, like the way they did. God, that movie's so good. So good.
Here's the tone I want for it. Here's the tone I want. What they did with Thor Ragnarok. Give me that. Get Thor Ragnarok tone.
Yeah.
Get Arnold as the villain. Bang. Give me a new Running Man.
Man, you are so on point. A Taika Waititi take on the Running Man.
I'm there.
It'd be fun, funny, tons of action.
Yep.
Great, great acting. Mm-hmm. He really, you know, puts actors in a great position to do cool things.
Yep.
You know what? And that you could have the Chris Hemsworth moment where you take the guy who's the super good looking leading man and you put him in a comedy role. Actually, the female Ghostbusters did a lot of things wrong, but his side, him taking over the Annie Potts character as the as the office assistant.
That was great.
It's so good. He's so funny.
Yeah.
When he holds up the two pictures, which one do you like better? Me playing saxophone or me listening to saxophone? He's got the saxophone against his ear.
Yep. It's great.
Oh. Matt, you, like, honestly, it is so good. It's so good, I'm assuming someone must be thinking about this.
Mm-hmm. Patent. I want to cut.
You know, there's always the ongoing debate. If you take your idea and you mail it to yourself, can you prove ownership in a court of law? And then let's go to the other Waterworld. Interesting suggestion.
It's just a big grand movie that I think, I don't know why everyone was hating it before it came out because the budget was out of control. I never understood why we cared about that, why we cared about it back then. It was, you know, I thought it wasn't a bad movie. Maybe I liked it more to overcompensate because everyone was shitting on it. But, you know, I thought it was good. And, you know, who doesn't like a good dystopian movie? You know, you had a great villain. It was a solid film. Give me a remake.
You know, the ambitions of the film probably better suit our time because of, like, it looked really good for the time, but you could probably do even more with it now. As you say, the dystopian and environmental thread that runs through it clearly.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing you make, too. Like, when films fail, but they cost a lot of money, there's a particular glee that comes out of critics. Like, and this goes back to Cleopatra and Liz Taylor and Richard Burton. Like, you know, it cost an enormous amount of money, it tanked, and everybody was like, isn't this great?
Yeah,
Heaven's Gate.
Yes, you know, exactly. It's odd schadenfreude. I don't know. It's odd.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah, it's really weird. Let me throw out a couple of mine, okay?
Yeah.
Honorable mentions. There's a couple of comic book franchises that I would love to make into films. One of them is Saga, and the other one's Paper Girls, both done by Brian K. Vaughan, who's a brilliant writer. I want to go back to this idea of the Fantastic Four, though, because that was what inspired this.
Yeah.
That's probably the number one comic book intellectual property I would love to see given a proper treatment. It feels like it's the great, like, now that Spider-Man's been kind of solved, X-Men is still lingering out there. But some of the X-Men movies are pretty good.
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's more than enough good ones. We don't, like, you know, if you've got to, if you've only so much money to spend, you know, it's like when you're getting government assistance. If it's between, you know, the elderly and Bay Street guys who can't afford a new tie, you're going to give the money to the elderly. Same thing here. X-Men, could it use some bucks? Sure. But let's pour all our money and resources into Fantastic Four.
You know, the version of the Fantastic Four, I want to do a little bit of, like, comic book nerdology here. It was really the title that changed the way that Marvel was going to do business. And before that, superhero stories were very much in the model of Superman. It's a kind of a super being, and we watch their adventures, but there wasn't much interior life. And one of the things that was so amazing about Fantastic Four number one, and this is largely due to the artwork of Jack Kirby, but also the genius of Stan Lee to find the humanity in a story, is he told a family story where the family didn't really get along. Like, that was a weird thing. You know, the Thing was originally conceived as you weren't sure if he was a good guy or a bad guy. You know, they bickered with each other. There was resentment towards Reed that he had, you know, brought them along this, you know, and experienced this cosmic rays accident. I feel like that's never really been explored in the Fantastic Four. You know, like in the mythology, like it was kind of alluded to in the first one that they did, but it was never really bitter. It was like hokey. Like, I really feel like you could tell an interesting story about how hard it is for people to get along. I mean, the genius of the X-Men was always how hard it is to be 13.
Yes.
Right?
Same thing with Spider-Man.
Right? This one, the Fantastic Four, is how hard it is to be in a family. And I've never seen anybody nail that yet. God, if they did, like, you should love these characters. And you should love their flaws.
Yep. But nope, they've had three films and they've all been spectacularly bad.
Let me throw out a couple other things that I would love to reboot, and then I'm going to really go off on one.
All right.
I would love to redo Bad News Bears.
Yep.
Because whenever we reboot stuff now that was sort of old and kitschy, we do it with like this darker tone, like Riverdale, you know? But the great thing about Bad News Bears was it was a really honest look at what it was like to be a kid, but it wasn't depressing. The kids drank beer, you know?
They swore, it's fun.
They swore, they smoked. The one kid rode a motorcycle. Like they were, you know, they were rounders. They were kids. Mm-hmm. Percy Jackson's getting a reboot on Disney Plus. Nobody's figured out what to do with that franchise yet, but it could be like massive. Constantine.
Yep.
Constantine with Keanu Reeves didn't quite work, but it feels like if they'd gotten it right, it could have been like John Wick, but for the supernatural.
And I think Keanu Reeves.
I would love to actually see. Totally. Yeah, like, wouldn't you love to see him with a good director and a good script take another shot at Constantine?
Yes, absolutely.
And then the one I really want to go off on is the concept behind Dark Universe, which was Universal Studios trying to reboot and make like a Marvel self-contained universe around all of their monster properties from the 30s. And it didn't really work. Like the Tom Cruise Mummy wasn't especially good. And I don't know, did you see it?
I didn't. And I, like, because I just heard such bad things. And if there's a Tom Cruise movie, usually I see it.
You know, it wasn't very good. And I think the thing that was most disappointing about it was how hard they worked to create a universe in one movie. They brought in a Russell Crowe character who was like Dr. Jekyll. And then they had like a whole sort of super unit of investigators who were trying to find out more. Like they just put all this in. It was like, we want what Marvel has.
Right.
And Marvel was interesting when you look back at it. Like they built the MCU, but they really did it bit by bit.
Oh, yeah.
The bit, like, who the hell knew what the Infinity Stones were until about 20 movies in?
Oh, yeah. And the bit was usually the last 2 minutes of every Iron Man movie. That's when they would start to add little things.
Right. So it was like they were like that dude who goes on a date and he's trying so hard to impress that he like just falls all over himself.
Yeah.
Instead of just being himself. Like if you could reboot that whole thing, because it's a great idea, you would kind of just want to say, think about how awesome these monsters are and tell a good monster story. And they will connect the way they connect. You know? But in the end, it's about character.
Yeah. That's a great one, Bob. I didn't think about it. But there's so much great literature there. There's so much you could use. There's so much pathos, so much emotion. Yeah, there's a lot of places you could go with those.
You know, Marvel Comics have given us some of the richest characters of the 20th century. And those geniuses at Marvel Studios figured out how to tell their story in a popcorn-eating kind of way. And that's cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like these monsters are so, like, there's a reason why they've survived. And Dracula is bigger than any one Marvel character. Mm-hmm. Frankenstein is bigger than any one Marvel character.
Yeah.
You know, they've got the greatest villains that the imagination has conjured up in the last 200 years. How do you F that up?
You put Keanu in it. Oof, worst part in Bram Stoker's Dracula. But we're going to have to, by the way, we got to go, Bob, because it's been an hour. It needs to be said, and hopefully I remember this. When you were talking about making things like Bad News Bears, where everyone makes it darker and more broody, you mentioned Riverdale. That means you've watched Riverdale. Riverdale is not a show that was designed for you.
I had to make sure that it was designed for my daughter, which it is not.
Which is okay.
I was the royal taster. I had to taste the food first to make sure there was no poison.
Bob, everything snaps back into focus. Okay, that's all I needed to hear.
This was fun, Matt.
Yeah.
I think Monday Jonas is going to join us.
Nice. Jonas Siegel from The Athletic.
We can do a big Leafs deep dive.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. That's great. So that's coming up on Monday or Tuesday. Monday's off. Is it a holiday? Eh, we'll ask Jonas. I mean, I'm around. You know, those long weekends are different now anyway.
Yeah, Matt, because we've all got so many plans on Monday versus Tuesday.
I know. The dumbest question we ask everyone. So what are you up to tonight? Nothing.
Do you have time at some time tomorrow?
Yeah.
Like Doug Ford's bacon cheesecakes, okay?
Yeah. Good for him. Right?
I know. They look good, eh?
Yeah. And that's a little more ambitious than just a normal cake. So good for
Jim Richards from CFRB had a great bit to raise money. He said, send me the money for the ingredients and I will bake Doug Ford's cheesecakes and then we will sell them and all the money will go to charity.
He's good. That's a
he's the best.
Movie. Yeah, he's the best. Really good.
All right, buddy.
All right. You have a great long-ish whatever weekend. Talk to you on Monday.
Okay. See you, pal.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.